The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are setting aside those Hollywood epics, the shiny armor and heroic duels.
Yeah, we're going deeper.
We're diving into the work of historian Harry Sidebottom to really understand ancient conflict, not just battles, but warfare as a system, sophisticated, terrifying, and formative.
That's the core of it, isn't it? The popular image, it just doesn't capture the underlying reality. We're looking at warfare, Greco-Roman, but also Eastern traditions as this like deeply embedded cultural thing.
Right. So our mission today is to strip away the romance. What was it really like back then when war wasn't just an event, but maybe the main engine driving?
Yeah, everything. Politics, tech, economics.
And Sidebottom's big argument, the one we really need to grapple with, is that sheer military necessity. That was the great catalyst. The absolute need to win forced progress.
Progress in what? Engineering? Logistics?
Exactly. Engineering, organization, logistics. Things that eventually built the foundations of, you know, our world.
Okay, so let's talk about the person who pulled all this together. Who is Harry Sidebottom?
Ah, well, he's got serious credentials. He's a fellow and tutor in ancient history at Oxford. His specialty, the Roman Empire, specifically that really messy, violent period, the 3rd century AD crisis.
A time of constant war, basically.
Constant war, just for survival. So, yeah, he knows the source material inside out, archaeology, texts, the lot.
But there's something else, isn't there, that makes his work maybe more accessible?
Definitely. He has this dual career thing going on. He's not just an academic digging through dusty reports. He's also a best-selling novelist.
The Warrior of Rome series, right? Historical fiction.
That's the one. And this combination, it's gold for understanding the topic. You know, the academic side gives the rigor, the analysis of the evidence.
But the novelist?
The novelist can take that data and try to reconstruct the human side. The feeling, the fear, the sensory experience of combat. It makes it vivid, relatable.
That connection feels pretty vital, especially for his main argument, which is...
That warfare wasn't some unfortunate blip. It was fundamental. A deeply embedded cultural phenomenon. It shaped their politics, their religion, their identity, even their basic economic survival.
So it wasn't separate from society. It was society in a way.
In many ways, yes. And the way he structures his books reflects that. It's not just a list of battles who won, who lost.
No chronology.
Less focus on strict chronology, more on the big questions like why fight? What were the actual motivations, the goals? Who fought? What kind of soldiers? What models existed? And crucially, what was it actually like? The psychology, the face of battle.
It definitely pushes back against that old view of ancient societies as somehow primitive.
Oh, absolutely. The sheer organizational skill, the engineering needed for these massive campaigns.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And he doesn't just stick to Greece and Rome.
Right. He brings in other perspectives.
Yeah. He looks east. You get insights into Persian heavy cavalry, Indian war elephants, and their really sophisticated forts. And, of course, Chinese strategy Sun Tzu, the art of war. Broadens the picture considerably.
Okay, let's dig into that first big question then. Why fight? The motivations must tell us a lot about the societies themselves.
They reveal everything. Let's start with the Greeks. For them, the drivers were often deeply personal, tied to the values of the polis, the city-state.
So less about conquest and more about status.
Kind of. It was about social standing, ethical validation. They were chasing honor Timi and that idea of lasting glory, kleos. Battle was seen as this ultimate test. The Aegon. You prove your virtue, your worth by fighting well.
You earned your place in the city through combat.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Now contrast that with Rome. Officially, Rome always had a justification, right? The concept of bellum iustem.
The just war. We hear echoes of that even today.
We do. They always frame their wars as defensive or somehow morally necessary. Necessary for stability, for bringing order.
But Sidebottom argues that's not the whole story. Or maybe not the real story.
Well, if you look under the surface... Beneath the official propaganda, the main driver looks overwhelmingly economic, brutally pragmatic, meaning the real goal, the engine of the whole thing, was plunder, land, and absolutely critically, slaves, mass acquisition of slaves.
So the wars weren't just funded by loot. They were for the loot and the people.
Precisely. The Roman military machine, in practice, was often a giant slave harvesting operation. Slaves were the bedrock of their economy. Working the farms, the mines, freeing up citizens for the legions.
And the wealth from that, from selling slaves and resources that funded more war.
Exactly. It's a terrifyingly efficient, self-perpetuating cycle. War pays for war, which generates more wealth and slaves, which allows for more war.
Wow. Okay, and that fundamental difference in why they fought honor versus, well, profit and slaves, that must shape who did the fighting.
Absolutely. It leads to two very different models of soldier. You've got the Greek hoplite and the Roman legionary. Completely different roles.
Mm-hmm. Let's start with the Greek hoplite. What defined him?
The hoplite was essentially a citizen soldier, usually a landowner, a farmer. His military service was directly tied into his political rights, his standing in the polis.
And that famous formation, the phalanx.
The phalanx, that dense block of men with interlocking shields, wasn't just tactics. Sidebottom really emphasizes this. It was like a physical manifestation of the city's political ideal.
How so? Like equality in action?
Kind of, yeah. Standing shoulder to shoulder, sharing the risk, relying on the man next to you. It mirrored that ideal of civic participation and collective action. You couldn't break rank easily because you'd endanger everyone. Success was shared.
Okay, so the phalanx is political as much as military. What about the Roman legionary? How did that model develop?
The legionary started perhaps similarly, but evolved. Critically, they evolved into long-serving, highly trained professionals.
So not just farmers called up for a season.
No. This professionalization, that was the game changer. Because suddenly, the Roman army wasn't tied to the agricultural calendar. They didn't have to go home for the harvest.
Which means they could fight whenever, year-round.
That's the key strategic edge. It allowed Rome to wage relentless, constant campaigns. But there was a massive political consequence.
What was that?
Well, these professional armies, fighting year after year far from Rome, they became intensely loyal to their successful generals, not necessarily the state back home.
Like Caesar and his legions in Gaul.
Exactly like Caesar. Give a brilliant general a loyal, permanent army. And eventually, that power destabilizes the whole political system. It's a direct line to the end of the Republic and the rise of emperors.
So professional armies enable constant campaigning, which brings us to logistics, moving and feeding these huge forces.
Oh, logistics. Sidebottom hammers this home. It was arguably the biggest challenge. Forget tactics for a second. Just keeping the army fed, watered, and supplied was a nightmare.
Even for the Romans, with their roads and organization.
Even for them. Campaigns often had to be seasonal, simply because of supply constraints. Think about the sheer numbers. A single legion, maybe 5,000 men.
Eats a lot of food.
Thousands of pounds of grain every single day. Plus water, fodder for animals. You needed massive, efficient supply lines, or your army just melted away.
And if those lines failed, or if you couldn't force a big battle,
then the reality wasn't glorious charges. It was often attrition. Sieges, raiding enemy territory, skirmishing, wearing the enemy down.
And sieges, they could get incredibly brutal.
This is maybe the hardest part to face in the sources. A successful siege ending in the city's capture. The standard outcome, the terrifyingly normal outcome, could be the massacre of fighting-age men and the enslavement of everyone else. Women, children, everyone.
Not an atrocity, but expected.
It was part of the accepted brutal logic of ancient warfare. A terrifying deterrent. And economically profitable, remember.
Which leads us straight into the face of battle, the actual experience. How does Sidebottom, being a novelist too, bring that to life?
He uses the evidence, archaeological finds, comparative psychology, scattered accounts to reconstruct the sensory reality. He focuses on the things that would have dominated experience.
Like what?
The noise, for one. Imagine thousands of men screaming war cries, the clash of metal on metal, the trumpets. It would be deafening. Then the sight dust everywhere, blood, the sheer pressure of bodies, and the physical exertion, fighting hand to hand until you're utterly exhausted.
He paints a picture of total sensory assault.
Exactly. And what's fascinating, and maybe counterintuitive for us, is his point about how battles were often decided.
Not just who killed more.
Often, no. Sidebottom stresses it often came down to which side's nerve broke first. Psychology was paramount.
So morale. Discipline.
Morale, discipline, the cohesion of the small units knowing the men beside you wouldn't run. And crucially, the commander's presence. Seeing him leading, sharing the danger, that could hold a line together.
And if a line did break?
That's when the real slaughter often happened. Most casualties occurred when one side turned and fled. They were cut down from behind. The psychological breaking point was everything.
Okay, let's pull back a bit. If we tie all these threads together, the motivations, the soldiers, logistics, the horror. What are the big overarching themes from Sidebottom's work?
Well, first, and maybe most importantly, is the need to challenge anachronism.
Meaning, don't judge the past by today's standards.
Exactly. We simply cannot apply our modern ethical framework. things we rightly see as war crimes today, like enslaving a whole city, were, back then, accepted, sometimes expected. Understanding that is key to seeing how the system actually worked rather than how we wish it worked.
It connects right back to that earlier point, war as an economic engine.
Absolutely. Plunder, land, slaves. These weren't just bonuses. They were often the primary goal. Warfare was a core profitable driver of the ancient economy, which helps explain why they invested so much in it, why the cycle kept going.
And maybe surprisingly, this constant focus on war led to innovation.
That's Sidebottom's warfare as the driver of innovation theme. It's counterintuitive, maybe. We like to think progress happens in peacetime. But the intense pressure of military competition drove huge advancements.
Like the Roman roads, siege engines.
Perfect examples. Roman roads were built primarily for moving legions quickly. Their engineering marvels, like aqueducts and siege machines, were often military-driven projects first. Metallurgy improved because they needed better weapons and armor. These things then had massive civilian benefits, of course.
And finally, the idea of adaptation and exchange. Success wasn't static.
Not at all, especially for Rome. Their long-term success wasn't about having one perfect, unchanging system. It was about incredible flexibility, learning, adapting.
Taking ideas from others, even enemies.
Yes, they constantly adapted strategies to fit local conditions. They adopted and improved cavalry tactics from enemies, learned better metalworking from barbarian tribes. They absorbed techniques from Greek and Eastern traditions. That adaptability was crucial.
Sidebottom has some really powerful ways of phrasing these core ideas. They stick with you.
He really does capture the essence. Let's share a few, paraphrased, of course.
Okay, on the sheer psychology of combat, he gets across something like this. The face of battle wasn't some neat diagram on a map, it was chaos. A full-on sensory assault noise, fear, dust, the physical crush. The biggest fight wasn't against the other guy's spear, it was against your own terror.
That really hits home. And then connecting the fighting back to society, especially for the Greeks. The Greek hoplite phalanx. It wasn't just soldiers in a block. It stood for a whole revolutionary idea of citizenship, linking fighting for the city, having a political voice, and your place in society.
It makes the phalanx so much more meaningful, and on Rome's unique success. Roman military dominance didn't really come from them being braver or even having vastly superior weapons initially. It came from their systems. Logistics, relentless training, organization, that's what let them keep professional armies fighting across continents for centuries.
That focus on the system, the organization, is key.
So these are fascinating insights into the past, but do they have relevance today? Any real-life applications?
I think so, definitely. Take the point about leadership and cohesion.
How soldiers held together under pressure.
Exactly. The principles that kept ancient units from breaking the discipline, the trust in your immediate comrades, the leader sharing the risk, those are timeless lessons. You see them applied in modern military units, sure, but also in any high-stress team environment. Emergency services, startups, building that resilience, that small unit bond, it's still vital.
That makes sense. What else?
Well, his whole approach offers a lesson in critical thinking, especially about information.
How so?
Because Sidebottom constantly has to evaluate ancient sources, histories, inscriptions that were often, frankly, propaganda. Written to make the emperor look good or justify a brutal war. Learning to read between the lines, identify bias, question the official story.
That's a crucial skill for navigating our own information age, isn't it? With social media, competing news narratives.
Absolutely essential. And finally, it helps us in understanding conflict today.
By looking beyond the surface.
Yeah. His work encourages you to look past the immediate political justifications for modern conflicts. To ask about the deeper cultural roots, the historical memories, the religious factors that might be driving things. War is rarely just about the stated objective. There's usually a much longer, deeper story.
So wrapping up, what's the big takeaway for you from Sidebottom's perspective?
For me, it's that powerful, maybe uncomfortable idea. Warfare wasn't just part of the ancient world. In many ways, it created it. The need to organize for war drove social structures, political systems, technological leaps. That Roman legion wasn't just soldiers. It was the endpoint of a sophisticated legal, social, and engineering culture designed to enable sustained, effective violence.
Yeah, it fundamentally deromanticizes the whole thing, which is necessary, I think. It forces you to see these ancient societies not as simple or heroic, but as complex, highly organized, capable of incredible sophistication and terrifying brutality. They operated under a very different but very effective logic.
It really provides that essential context. moving us beyond the myths and into a much more grounded understanding of how the ancient world actually functioned.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.